We had a collaboration with some Chinese scientists.
Here we have a vaccine. What is the problem? Get over it.
Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
I hope that it can occur in a civil way. I mean civil in a special way, peaceful.
The biggest question, maybe in economics and politics of the coming decade, will be what to do with all these useless people.
I just see the need for such a dialogue, and I see the need for action. I see the need for a great reset.
We are 47 months into 2 weeks to flatten the curve. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Johnny Engston alongside the fan favorite. You know him, you love him. He's back for a very short podcast this week for Chewing the Fat, and we will be back for an extended one, hopefully, in the next couple of days. Marty Foster. Marty, how are you?
I'm pretty good. Thank you very much for asking. The weather's changed again. It's back to rain. A couple of nice days of sun in which I managed to do some proper carpentry on the gunwales of my little boat, or one of my little boats, and it was good. But now it's just wet and damp, and just the sort of day when you might as well just do a podcast.
Yeah, I do apologize if there's some noise, because I do have some workers just outside the window there, but I have those new triple glazed windows, so you can hardly hear it. I'm hoping it will not bleed through.
Yeah, we had the whole house done in the triple glaze, and the only time you hear any noise from outside now is if you have the window open. That's how I can tell that my good lady has opened a window and therefore is wasting energy by trying to heat all of the county rather than just the house. So, yeah, very good stuff, the old triple glazing.
Yeah, it also works both ways. You can't hear any noise outside from those that are inside, such as the woman that you shouted at for wearing a mask down the street as you were looking out your kitchen window, I believe.
Yeah. She wasn't that far.
You thought I forgot. You thought I forgot, didn't you?
No, but this bloody woman, I saw another one this morning. I've just been into town to take care of a couple of things, as we were talking about earlier. And this guy drives past in a black Lexus wearing a mask in the car by himself. What a f**ktard. I mean, seriously. And this woman, she's been mask wearing all the time. And again, she's going to her car by herself, in her car, even walking around shopping. I've seen her wear the mask. And today, actually, at the opticians, the optical operative that was measuring me up for some new glasses said, "Would you like me to wear a face covering?" I thought, I don't know. I know it's Ramadan, but you don't need to, wear a yashmak or a burqa for my benefit. So, yeah.
These people with their masks. I actually saw a meme the other day of an N95 and one of the blue paper surgical masks strapped to the exhaust pipe of a car, saying that they'd solved the global warming problem.
Well, there you go. See, just cut those emissions down.
Indeed.
I think the particles are bigger than 10 millimicrons, which means they probably would hatch into the mask, actually. Yeah, that might work. Wouldn't do your engine much good, but... Some people, hey.
Some people, I suppose. Did I ask you about the woman, the sister-in-law of the Senate minority leader who drowned in the Tesla in the Texas lake? Did I tell you about that?
You did tell me about that. She reversed, didn't it? Jam in reverse, and yeah. She just reversed into the lake and was unable to escape.
Supposedly, yeah. But now the Texas investigators are saying that this was not an accident.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't think it was an accident from the sounds of it in the first place, because it was just too bizarre. But I saw a clip of Musk talking about one of their new cars, and he says, "Oh yeah, we saw all these cars catching fire when it when it flooded. There was a load of cars in a holding area before they were being shipped somewhere. The area got flooded and they all caught fire. And I don't think they were Teslas. And he says, "Oh no, no, no! We've made our batteries waterproof, so that can't happen." And then there was a clip of one of these EVs that he makes, akin to that space vehicle, the one they sent up. And it was like
the Cybertruck thing,
something like that. But it was driving through 5 or 6 feet of water. Not 5 or 6 feet, probably 2 or 3 feet of water. So the water was up past the side windows, and it drove through no problem. So yeah, there are ways and means of making these things waterproof, but it's that kind of ruggedization and military style and military level technology and standards, you know, specs for vehicles that we just can't afford. Normal people can't afford to buy a vehicle that's been made to those kind of specifications. So whether or not Musk's latest endeavor can drive through water without catching fire or not is irrelevant, because people just won't be able to afford the vehicle.
Military specifications on a vehicle. You know, I just so happen to have a nice video here put out by the Russian Ministry of Defense. And they're showing off some of their artillery here. I'm sure you recognize some of this this hardware that's here in this field that they're using in parts of Ukraine.
Yeah, it's a multiple launch ballistic rocket system.
Yeah. Now, just looking at this, I mean, I'm telling you right now, my friend, I'm pretty sure I'm going to need at least 2 tetanus shots looking at this thing, because, well, she's a little rough around the edges there. You know, I honestly don't feel like I would be climbing into any of that. And wait till you see the launching mechanism once they get inside the vehicle, as this young man is about to do here. You see, this is state of the art, things that, you know, we peasants cannot afford here. And I'm pretty sure that I think ours are just a little bit more advanced than some of this.
Yeah, for the benefit of the listener, the launch mechanism inside the cab of this vehicle looks like it was made in probably about 1960. The vehicle is very rusty and mud covered, but that is what you would expect. These vehicles have been out in the field doing whatever they've been doing for quite some time, and they were already old to begin with. If those rockets reach their target, it's irrelevant. I'm sorry. I know you're just having a bit of a giggle, but
just a little. Yeah,
it's irrelevant as to how old the technology is. These ballistic rockets, which are unguided, they're just elevated and aimed, and they're not accurate to like within 2 square meters, such as the MRLS systems that we use these days. But they will cause problems, and if there is enemy wherever that thing was pointed at, those rockets are going to do them damage. Now, you look at vehicles nowadays. When I was growing up, back in the dark ages, people could do maintenance on their cars, even electrical maintenance. Nowadays, with all the added monitoring systems, engine management systems, and the chips and mini computers that modern cars have, people can't maintain their own vehicles. Whereas kit like that could be maintained with a spanner and a hammer, simple as that. And so
duct tape and some wire.
Yeah, it was, you know, you have duct tape and WD-40, and then you have a flow chart. Does it move? No. Is it meant to move? Yes. Use WD-40. Does it move? Yes. Is it meant to move? No. Use duct tape.
Duct tape.
You know, we can take the proverbial piss out of the Russians for their old kit as much as we like. At the end of the day, it still works, and they've got a lot of it because they don't throw anything away. There's no recycling. They've still got
2,000 DC-3s in service that we gave them during the lend-lease, which they never paid us for. So
of course they didn't pay you. We paid you.
We paid you
for our stuff. I watched that Tom Hanks film that's been out recently yesterday, The Greyhound. That's worth a watch. It'll make you proud to be American.
I don't need Tom Hanks to tell me that. Tom Hanks makes me sad to be an American.
Well, me too. But that wasn't a bad movie. I say Me Too. I'm not an American. Alhamdulillah.
We'll have you if you don't want.
I wouldn't want to be while you're still under a Democrat administration.
You know you want one.
Well, I'm waiting for my passport to run out so I can get a blue one as well, because at the moment I've still got EU colours.
Yes,
on
you do.
Mine.
Yeah, actually, there was a map that was released by the EU Commission the other day saying that all the EU members had to agree on something, and oddly enough, the UK was still on it.
Yeah, probably because we're still paying.
You got to pay that tax. I was going to show you this video here. We were talking about propaganda videos. These are the Houthis out of Yemen. This is their latest propaganda video. Nice trucks they've got there. Nice brand new kit. Looks like they just put it on before they got to this. Of course, that's a mock-up of an Israeli village. I have to be honest, I'm just looking at this, and I'd like to get your considered and informed opinion. They don't look very well trained when they go through some of these maneuvers. They look like they're just, taking their sweet time.
Well, this is not very coordinated. This sequence at the moment is showing a breaching technique through a compound wall.
Yes, but when they get to room clearing here in just a second, you'll see.
Yeah, I don't know what he's firing. That looks like, see, I know, I see it. That's why it looks fake, because the buildings are fake. Now, of course, they're not going to be terribly well trained. These aren't tier one operators. These are goat herders dragged into uniform and given firearms. They probably already had the firearms. They probably bought the AKs with them, because everyone carries guns out there. I've seen people in Saudi, I've seen people turn up and have their vehicles searched at military establishments, open the boot, and there's a couple of AKs in the boot. It's got nothing to do with the what his job was, and didn't need the weapon. That was a private weapon in the boot of his car.
Just because.
So yeah. Oh, look how firmly he stamped
Absolutely.
On that Israeli
Absolutely.
Flag.
You see that? Yeah, they're all standing on it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
you see that?
Oh yes, marvelous. Wouldn't last 5 minutes, even against the IDF elements that are conscripts. They're better trained than these Muppets. But they've got some nice kit. And have you noticed as well, if you look, even whether it's a para stock AK-47 or the wooden stock, the fixed stock, there's a tendency to wrap tourniquets just around the stock. Some say, oh, it's so they can use them nice and quick. But the tourniquets that they get issued are rubber, and they wrap onto the stock and lock off. And it actually gives them some form of padding, because they're quite an uncomfortable weapon to fire from the shoulder, which is, I think, why most people who wind up using an AK-47 walk forward firing from the hip. Because it's going to go where it wants to go anyway, because it's got a horrible climb and recoil on it anyway.
But the main thing is that it fires, and it's tough. That was the point of it, is just the fact that it's never going to fail you.
Yeah. I mean, they did a study after the Second World War, and they estimate that only 2% of infantry shots fired are actually aimed shots. All the rest of them are ineffective suppressive fire or just praying and spraying. So, if you can fight a whole 5 years worth of war with only 2% of your shots being aimed, I'm sure these guys can do whatever they need to do with their extremely inaccurate, untrained Houthis.
Right. Moving over into this, I wanted to touch on this a little bit today. I talked to you about this on the phone this morning. The problems we're having with our aircraft, most notably the Boeing aircrafts. Airbus, I don't think, has had any problems. Fingers crossed, knock on wood. But the latest comes from this morning in the country of New Zealand. There was a flight from Sydney to Auckland, and a Boeing 787 dropped mid-flight just out of nowhere, just, straight down, of course, leveled off a little bit, and it was able to land. 50 people were injured on that flight, and they had to make an emergency landing. And the New Zealand government went in and confiscated the black boxes before anybody could get near them. Now, we've seen a string of these problems. We've seen wing damage. We've seen engines catch fire. We've seen emergency landings, gear falling off last week. I don't know if you caught any of that coming out of like LAX and places like that. I've got some video of that. I'll go over some of that as you're giving your considered and informed opinion. But And then of course, the door that fell off from the Alaska Airlines flight, where they had to turn around and make an emergency landing. And Boeing has been under an inquisition here lately. One of their employees, or former employees who retired in 2017, was actually just speaking to Boeing attorneys, giving deposition 2 days ago. And he was set to testify today for the third round of hearings in the inquisition with Boeing. Oddly enough, they found, strange how this happens, they found him in the parking lot of his hotel with a self-inflicted gunshot wound. It was ruled an apparent suicide in his,
so
his truck.
So where is he being, or where was the inquiry being held?
Charleston, South Carolina.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. So it was in the U.S. But this is him just giving an interview just a while back. I don't have an exact date on this, but just giving this credence, listening to guy spends years working for this company. Then he gives this statement and said this in multiple interviews, this type of, you know, rhetoric, and then testifies. And then all of a sudden, you know, he takes his own life. Right. Let's hear what he had to say.
One, this is not a 737 problem. It's a Boeing problem. And I know the FAA's gone in and they've done due diligence and inspections to assure that the door plugs of the 737 are installed properly and the fasteners are torqued properly. But my concern is, what's the rest of the airplane? What's the rest of the condition of the airplane? And the reason my concern for that is, back in 2012, Boeing started removing inspection operations off their jobs. So it left the mechanics to buy off their own work. So what we're seeing with the door plug blowout is what I've seen with the rest of the airplane, as far as jobs not being completed properly, inspection steps being removed, issues being ignored. My concerns are with the 737 and the 787, because those programs have really embraced the theory that quality is overhead and non-value added. So those two programs have really put a strong effort into removing quality from the process. When I first started working at Charleston, I was in charge with pushing back defects to our suppliers. And what that meant was, I'd take a group of inspectors and actually go to the supplier and inspect their product before they sent it in. Well, I'd taken a team of four inspectors to Spirit AeroSystems to inspect the 41 section before they sent it to Charleston. And we found 300 defects. Some of them were significant that needed engineering intervention. When I returned to Charleston, my senior manager told me that we had found too many defects and he was going to take the next trip. So the next trip he went on, he took two of my inspectors. And when they got back, they were given accolades for only finding 50 defects. So I pulled that inspector aside and I said, did Spirit really clean up their act that quick? That don't sound right. And she was mad. She said, no. Said the two inspectors were given 2 hours to inspect the whole 41 section and they were kicked off the airplane.
Yeah, there's some corruption right there. I mean, I know people who work doing what he was doing in other parts of industry, not for the aviation side of things, but for, let's say, medical machinery. And that you go to a supplier and you audit their production system, and you might spot check and sample things as they come off the production line. What he said right at the start, where he said that technicians and engineers were signing off their own work, that's all very well if they're going to be using and directly affected by any catastrophic failure of the equipment. So let's say, take for instance, back when I was a weapons engineer in the Navy, I also not only maintained weapon systems, but fired them as well. So if I didn't maintain, strip and assemble and clean and prep for firing a weapon properly, I could well wind up being killed or maimed by a breech explosion or a missile not going off the way it should. So I was at risk. Those engineers are not at risk, and therefore they must have a third party inspect their work. It's as simple as that. So you said that he didn't appear to be about to throw a double six and take himself out of the game.
No, why would he do that by, you know, and risk everything that he was risking and then all of a sudden just go on and off himself when he's about to give further testimony?
Yeah, I mean,
right after he spoke to Boeing attorneys.
It's open to question, shall we say, because he looked tired. You could hear the jadedness within his voice. It wouldn't take much to push someone who knows all that and is up against the system into a situation like that. But you couldn't say one way categorically or other whether he was about to take his own life. But it is certainly very suspicious that there he is as a whistleblower, and the next thing you know, he's gone. It's like the mob taking out witnesses and jury members, isn't it? It's there's enough cynicism in my soul to say, well, maybe he was murdered to keep him quiet.
This just dropped out of the New York Times. Federal Aviation Administration 6-week audit of the people running Boeing and Spirit AeroSystems, which is what the gentleman was just talking about. This literally just dropped just now, 2 minutes ago, has found dozens of problems with the 737 MAX manufacturing process, citing an FAA presentation. During Boeing's audit at the FAA conducted 89 product reviews, which evaluated the manufacturing process. Of the 89 audits, the plane maker passed 56, but did not meet specification standards in 33, resulting in 97 alleged non-compliance.
Yeah, I've audited planes. I've been an auditor. And yeah, you can give a non-compliance notice to whoever you're auditing, but there's a sliding scale of how serious those non-compliances are. And you'd have to have more data to say anything firm about that audit you were just talking about, because those non-compliances might be really easily fixable or just not that serious, not serious enough to cause an accident. You know, without more data, I can't really comment much further than
that. No, of course not.
But it's still strange. Quite a high number. It's still quite a high number of non-conformances.
Yes, and I did actually just see, I must have missed it the other day, there was an
A380.
No, that's the big one, isn't it?
Yeah.
An A320 from Airbus, from United Airlines in San Francisco, made an emergency landing at LAX due to a hydraulic system problem. Like I was asking, what was it, about a month ago? I said, are we trying to one-up Aeroflot now?
Sounds to me like the whole grip that, you know, used to be had on aviation safety in the United States has slipped away. And I think personally, I get the feeling that it's down to the number of people they lost during COVID. You had a lot of experienced engineers and technicians who may have refused to be vaccinated, who then lost their job as a result of that. You've also got people just retiring, and the training has not it suffered during COVID because there wasn't the face-to-face time for training that
I think training becomes irrelevant because a lot of these airline companies, Boeing being one of them, they were one of the very first companies to adopt what are called DEI hiring practices.
Okay, but as long as the course, they can hire whoever they want. They can hire an orangutan from Myanmar or Borneo or whatever it's called now. Burma is Myanmar. But they can get someone who is completely inappropriate on the face of it if they can pass the training and demonstrate all the practical elements of the role. Then they're trained, and it doesn't matter what they call themselves, what their pronouns are. It's whether or not the training is effective and works. You know, whether or not taking someone from being employed, yay, I've got a job. I'll just put my unicorn outfit on and head down to the training center. And if the training does what it's supposed to do, then they should still be able to safely maintain aircraft.
Yes, they should, unless they hire the people that we were talking about a while back with the new hiring practice from the FAA. So, well, if the FAA is going to go in and audit, well, then you're going to have those people that are, you know, blind and deaf and everything else that are going to go in there and do the inspections. So,
well, yeah, but that number of 89 non-conformances would have been much lower if a blind, deaf person was conducting the audit.
Maybe that's what they're trying to do. All right. Do you have anything else you want to chew the fat on today? Oh, I do have one surprise for you, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Is his name Bob Harris, the painter?
Bob Harris. Bob Ross?
Bob Ross. That's it. Yeah. You know the paintings that he always...
Yeah, of course. I was just watching him the other day, yeah.
Yeah, occasionally he pops up on our TV and we don't turn him over. If he comes on, we watch it because we like to know where this happy little tree is going to go. And the kind of paintings that he puts together, they are also the most popular screensavers. And the reason that they are popular is because when a primal human, the primal part of a human brain, sees trees for shelter and also suggesting there might be game and fruit and nuts and a stretch of water, fresh water, that suggests you've got a water supply and surrounding hills that give you a certain amount of protection from the elements and a vantage point to defend yourself from, what people are seeing is where they want to live. And that's why people choose photographs or paintings like that as their screensavers, because it makes them calm. It sort of suggests all the things that are secure. But the problem is, most people today could not survive for 24 hours in a wilderness situation. Society has taken away those skills. They were basic skills that everybody needed because that's the kind of environment everybody lived in, let's say 2,000, 3,000 years ago. And so society has taken away those skills because now we need to be able to operate a computer, do mental arithmetic, be trustworthy enough to work in a store, all those kind of things. And we haven't got time or the space or even the rights to access the land to do those kind of skills. In the coming future, if things go the way that they look like they're going, people are going to need those skills. And we've talked about prepping and so on in the past. And I'm wondering if, because if you are bored enough to go through TikTok or YouTube, you will see endless videos of people building shelters, cooking food that they've gathered from the wild. And I'm wondering if someone somewhere isn't trying to get those ideas back into people's heads. So, yeah, it was because I saw Bob Ross on telly and I thought about the whole screensaver thing. Then I thought, actually, the primal part of your brain might desire that as a place to be. But you, Mr. Individual or Mrs. Individual or they individual, wouldn't have a snowball's chance in hell of surviving too long. So my advice to everybody is do some outdoorsy stuff and try and build your skills up, because you never know when you might need them.
That's good advice. And you know, we did something on emergency preparedness. We did a few podcasts on those. Maybe we should do those again. We should go back and do one of those again, one of those specials.
It'd be a good thing to revisit, because the chatter and talk in social media and even on the news is suggesting that society as we know it is falling apart at the seams.
It is, yeah. And as a matter of fact, it's funny you say that, because I was actually cruising the Daily Fail the other day, and I ran across this. I'm a doomsday prepper, and here's what you must have in your World War III nuclear survival kit. So perhaps we need to go over some of this. Maybe we can set this for a couple of weeks out before you leave.
And well, the first thing you must have is a vehicle stocked with everything you can imagine ever being useful that you can get in and drive to a place that is nowhere near a center of population. Because when it all falls down, it's those centers of population that will become the most dangerous places to be. Yeah. So we should revisit
that.
That's
true, yeah. Yeah, we should revisit that. However, before society collapses just yet, I want you to take a look at this. Britain's chavviest house. I want you to look at this, right? Because if there's anybody that's not going to make it, right? This house is up for sale. You can have this for the low, low price of £180,000. And this man is, he's done his house up. I'm going to show it to you. You can buy it. It's on the market. And some people are, you know, they're ridiculing this, you know, this poor man. He's put all this work into this place. He's saying that, you know, I like it and I'm going to sell it. And that's just my place, right? So I'm going to enjoy it, right? Now, take a look at some of these decor items that he's picked out here, okay? You've got the glitter ball vase, right? You got that. You've got a superhero chess set on the table there just behind him. Now, again, this is a guy's house. Okay.
Yeah.
He's also got the Chanel duvets in the, you know, the throw every, you know, the pillows and all that stuff going on in the bedroom. Superhero chess set. This is the kitchen.
It's decorated like a, well, a French tarts boudoir, for want of a better word. It looks like, and you look on the outside, it is a typical end of terraced, three-bedroomed domicile. He's got these enormous iron gates at the end of his driveway. Yeah, he's spent money. What he's basically done is try to polish a turd, which you can do if you pack it down hard enough and bake it. So they did that on Mythbusters. What this man needs is a queer eye for a straight guy, because
there's the back garden. Look how he's done that.
If a team of gay men with good taste went round that place, they would rip it to shreds. It's done. It's just decorated in a very gaudy way. Have you ever been to Barcelona?
No, have I? I can't remember.
Gaudi, the architect and designer.
Madrid. Sorry. Yeah. You've been Barcelona, to Madrid. Madrid.
But
yeah.
in Barcelona, you've got this great big park.
Been through the airport. That's as close as I got.
And they've got also the Sagrada Familia, which is the gaudiest church on the face of the earth. And it's not been finished because it had so many external architectural swirls and buttresses and all kinds of things. And it's just too much. So this guy, he thinks he's going to get 180,000 for it. Well, he might do if he took all that really gaudy, crappy, crass furniture and furnishings out and just took some photographs of it you know, the empty shell. He might get the money, but no, that he has wasted a lot of money, and taste is something that happens to other people as far as he's concerned.
All right, my friend, we will go ahead and call this one done. Thank you for chewing the fat with me this afternoon. It's been a pleasure. We'll see you in a couple of days.
Yes, you will. Well, thank you very much. I really enjoyed that. I suppose I better get back to work. So I will catch you later. Thank you, listeners.
All right, we will go ahead and jump out of here for the afternoon. It's been an absolute pleasure, my friend. I'll see you in 2 days. Thank you for being here today. Thank you to all of the listeners. God bless everyone and have a great evening.